Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content, then for guys that are up in the North or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. Air Medcare. Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, they're the largest air ambulance membership network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.deals/airmedcare to enroll.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us again for another Hunting Land podcast. I'm your host, Butch Theory, and I'm joined today with Nick Williams. Welcome back to the show, Nick. How are we doing today?
Man, I'm getting fired up. We've had it hot today, but we've had some cool snaps, and I'm ready for deer season. I don't know about you, but that's the thing on my mind right now is deer and ducks. I had a buddy the other day sending me some trail camera pictures. I've been seeing deer on the side of the road in the morning, taking my daughter to daycare. Been going to the deer closet, been getting ready, getting my pack straight, and getting my bow tuned up.
I need to get my bow out, admittedly. Still in the case, but I am getting ready. Up until about a week ago, you know, Joe's been talking about hunting season for 2 months, getting all his stuff ready, and I wasn't quite there yet, but I got my seed ordered for some fields and starting to get geared up for sure. Definitely been up there the past couple weekends doing some trimming and got my cameras up, starting to see some decent bucks on camera, so I'm getting primed up.
Absolutely. And I know for me at least, it's different on every piece of property. Everybody's got their own secret for success, but man, I love early season just because it's so simple, you know, like the deer haven't been as pressured.
They're actually a little patternable as well. I feel like they're much more easier to pattern.
I've said this before, and I forget who said it first to me, but it's true. And I always go back to this: deer do three things. They eat, they hide, they procreate. And the rut's fun, but it's chaotic.
Yeah, it is.
But you know, October, the deer are just moving back and forth between bedding and feed, bedding and feed, bedding and feed. So if you can find the food, you can find the deer. It's simple. You know, I'm a simple mind. I enjoy simple things. So I'm excited today. My understanding is we got a guest who can tell us a little bit about deer food.
Yep, definitely, man. Today we're going to be talking about tips and techniques for using deer attractants this fall. And to help us do that today, we're going to be talking with Zach Clark with Big & J Long Range Attractants. Welcome to the show, Zach. How are you doing today?
Man, not too bad. It's a beautiful day in Arkansas. A little bit warmer than I'd like this time of year, but not too shabby.
I'm ready for some cool downs, man. I was looking at the forecast this weekend up in my place in mid-Alabama. It's going to be like 65 on Saturday morning. It makes me want to get up there and get in the woods.
Man, we're still pushing low 90s in the evenings here. I don't know. But it seems like the last few years it's been like that. We finally, though, the good news is we got a bunch of rain for the food plots and stuff we put in about a week and a half ago. They finally kicked off.
Yeah, we did too. Well, Zach, welcome to Hunting Land, man. We appreciate you joining us today. Tell us a little bit about your hunting experience and what you do over at Big & J and how you got involved.
Mm-hmm. I've worked for Big & J for about 10, 11, maybe 12 years now. I started off in the marketing. I have a bachelor's degree in marketing and a minor in management. But anyway, I got hired in on the marketing side of things. And as we've grown, well, now technically I'm director of sales and marketing. So I had kind of an opportunity there to transition into sales. And I really enjoy that side of the business and retained a lot of the marketing aspect of what we do as well. But I've been here for about 10 years now.
Very, very cool. Tell us a little bit about your hunting experience. You've been hunting for a long time?
Man, I've been hunting since I was a kid. I grew up hunting. It's funny because where I'm at in Arkansas, we have a bunch of turkeys, and I'm a hardcore deer and duck hunter, and I've got a bunch of buddies that, they love to hunt turkeys, and that's just not really my thing. But it's, growing up, dad, he deer hunted and duck hunted. That's kind of, it's funny growing up, you follow in your father's footsteps. I never really took into turkey hunting and stuff, but yeah, I've deer hunted all my life pretty much.
Yep, I can relate to that too. Turkey never really became my thing. It was always, spring came around, and I'm from the charter fishing industry. That's what my family did growing up. They still do that. And it was the time to go fishing in the spring. We didn't have no time to go turkey hunting.
I'll chime in. That's fun. We don't have Joe on this one. I know. I mean, we'll joke about it.
He's the turkey
He's
nut.
Mr. Turkey, but I'm right there with y'all. Like, if I want a turkey, I can go to the grocery store. I can't get venison from the local Piggly Wiggly.
That's right.
That's funny because there's been a couple of times in the past. I'll be in Walmart and I'll go over there and hold up a frozen butter ball and send a picture to my buddies and be like, "Hey man, I got mine." But because
Tagged out.
we have a bunch of turkeys on our place, but man, it's just something I've never gotten into.
Yep, same
That's
here.
it. If turkeys was all that, then they'd let you climb up in a tree and hunt them with a rifle and all the stuff you can do with deer. I'm not buying all that about turkeys being all that smart.
Man, I did though. I had one buddy come up here one year because I'll let some of my good friends I'll go up here and turkey hunt. And the first time up at the farm, we get out and he had a hoot owl call, locator, and we located one. We go sit under the tree and it flies down. He looks at me. He's like, "Man, why are you not calling?" I was like, "Dude, I don't turkey hunt. I just got the land and I'm the extra gun."
All right, I don't know what to
He's like, "Well, crap, I don't call either." So I don't know.
That's funny. Well, Zach, you talk about being mostly a deer hunter. That's me. I love to shoot deer. I love to shoot wood ducks. And usually come about July, I'm a little antsy. And I've made it this year to where it's just been within the past week. I've been going through my deer closet and getting ready for that fall season. And I love fall deer season. I love early archery season. The name of the game down here where I'm at least is just chasing for acorns. When you're out hunting, if you're scouting for natural deer attractants like browse or mast, I don't know if y'all get like persimmons and stuff up there, but what are you looking for in early bow season for something that's going to attract deer to a hunting area?
I guess it's kind of a twofold question. Depending on what state, can I use attractants, or did you say natural?
Natural attractants, I think, to start off. Yeah. What are you looking for just as far as a natural something that's going to concentrate deer in an area?
Man, for me, no matter where I've hunted at, between clover, well, actually, where I'm at right now, we've still got some really good clover going, and persimmons and acorns and stuff around here, even just about anywhere I've ever hunted. Man, once the acorns hit the ground, I don't care what you put out, pour out for deer. They don't give a crap. It's like they know they've got a certain amount of time to eat those acorns, before before they're falling, before they rot on the ground. And that's all they want to be. Like around here, I've got a bunch of acorn flats and stuff. And I know certain times of year, well, when they fall, I can leave every other stand, forget what I'm doing, and go there. Now, I may not hunt directly in that flat, I'll hunt some of the skirts and trails here and there. And like on the farm here, we have a lot of persimmon trees, man. They do really good for them persimmon trees.
Yeah, well, I think you kind of answered my question there. But how, like we all mentioned, there's lots of stuff for them to eat in the early fall, that early archery season. Do you stick to the acorns mostly, or how do you decide which is going to be the best, natural food source?
Honestly, for me, it's more off of the trail. I'll let the trail camera tell me for the most part
That's right.
what deer are moving when and what area. But for the most part, it's more the trail camera, the wind. I know where the multiple food sources are, and depending on what the wind's doing, it'll be really for me where I go.
I gotta circle back, Clark. You was talking about the persimmons, and we have a bunch of persimmons, and like right now they're falling in the woods. But the way our season lines up, by October 15th on our opener, our persimmons, it's maybe once every 5 years I get to hunt a persimmon tree. Do y'all's hang on a little bit later up where you're at?
Oh yeah, they do. They're still pretty green.
Really?
Yeah,
That
and
must be
actually
nice.
this year, man, they're loaded. I don't know what's happened. I don't know what's different. It's kind of like you were saying. I mean, about every 3 or 4 years, man, we'll have like a big crop of them, and we do this year.
Do y'all get any honey locust up there? You ever get the chance to hunt a honey locust tree? That's usually later in the year too.
No, we don't.
I got 90,000 acres of swamp, and I got one honey locust tree. And when it's going, that's a good hunt. But it's like you said, it's mainly acorns down here where I'm at, man. Once the acorns start falling, until they dry up later in the season. That's the name of the game. What about for y'all? Like, as it transitions from kind of that early summer and you start getting later, how does that food transition usually look like for y'all's deer where you're at?
Do you mean, well, like, during the summer, of course, it's the weather's different, but we have a lot of Bermuda hay fields and stuff around here. And the deer are out in the fields and stuff, and then you can kind of, they'll get pushed back into the woods. And when they're focused more on, I don't know if it's more they're becoming nocturnal, they're still hitting the fields in, or it's more natural browsing in the woods, but you can kind of see them transition as the temperature slowly changes. They're not hanging out in the fields as much.
Zach, we're talking about natural and man-made attractants today a little bit. Just the deer attractants in general. It seems like in the last, you said you've been a Big J last 10 years. I would say probably in the last, I don't know, 5 or 7, it seems like they've gotten really popular with the different blocks and the attractants and things like that. How have you seen the use of these attractants evolve over the years in terms of like strategy and effectiveness?
I think there's more people definitely using attractants than there used to be. Now, are you meaning from a product standpoint of as far as how it's actually developed or usage in the field?
Usage in the field, like actual, hunting strategy, and are they getting better?
No, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still the same. I don't really think the attractant world can really change because there's only a limited grain source. You can't just invent a new type of grain or I guess block, you could say, because it's going to be the same grain, whether it's in a granular form or just in that. If it's in that block, so to say. So there's not really much innovation as far as product wise go. I'd say for us, sales have been up. I mean, we've seen really good sales this year. It seems like some of the hunting community is kind of starting to come back around, after COVID was rough for, a lot of people, but for the outdoor world, it shut everything else down. It took all these kids that are out playing travel ball and stuff like that, it shut them down. So it pushed more people to get back to the outdoors. So I mean, I would say attractants are definitely being utilized more than ever, but as far as like tactics on how to use them, not necessarily. Maybe, if you have a deer that's nocturnal, you might change up your tactic on how you're using it then, so to say, or if you have a lot of pressure on your land or surrounding land, your placement of attractant, something like that may change. But in general, no, I guess.
I'm gonna dig in a little deeper to kind of what Butch was getting at as far as tactics, maybe kind of reframe it. You sound like you do a lot of the type of hunting I do, which is basically hunting your natural attractants that are already out there, whether it's a clover patch or whether it's acorns, persimmons, whatever it is. I guess like when you have those resources in the woods, you mentioned that it was kind of hard to compete with acorns. Do you have any tips on, how you can like, or you don't want to, I guess in my mind, you wouldn't want to compete with your natural food sources because you're never going to win. But are there particular circumstances where you'll supplement those natural resources with attractants? Or how do you use attractants and not be fighting your natural resources?
Well, okay, I'm with you now. So, but like the as soon as first the first for me, in the bow rolling into muzzleloader season, your persimmons, your clovers, your acorns are either gone or rotten by then, and then yeah, like for me, I mean, I can where I'm at, I can run feeders and put out attractants year round. So I'll run, a lot of spin cast type feeders because I don't want them going off at night. We do have some gravity style feeders too. But for me, as soon as the natural browse are gone, and honestly, even while they're the acorns and all that kind of stuff are plentiful, I'm still running attractants because, like for me, if like when my kids want to shoot a crossbow, we're going to be in a blind looking at a block or a feeder because a lot of those other places where I hunt, like the like a big old white oak tree or something like that, I've just got a lock on stand where it's just going to be me hanging from a tree. So I mean, you can use attractants. There's a place for them, but I'd say year round, never really, stopping. It just depends on what you're doing, maybe.
I like what you say about using it to put kids on them, or like I wrote an article a while back talking about early bow season and food sources and attractants. And to me, one of the things that's always been great about an attractant is, yeah, you may have a hot white oak tree or you may have a locust tree. Like there's all kind of things that I know attract deer, but a lot of times, especially I hunt a lot of public land and so you can't really manage the property, and sometimes, man, it's just not convenient. Like there may be an awesome oak tree, and you find it scouting, and you're like, "Well, I can't hunt it." Like they're bedded here, and the predominant wind is here. So, like if I try to hunt this oak tree, like I'm just gonna be blowing hunters stink up on those deer. And the nice thing to me about an attractant is you can put it out in a place where it's convenient for you to get to. It's convenient to take people to, kids. Is that kind of what you were driving at as far as putting it in a specific place?
Yeah, like for us, our slogan is long range attractants. And at the end of the day, we've actually, depending on, the wind and stuff, we've actually got video. I have to go back and try to find it. One of our hunting shows, there's a buck out in a cornfield, and it may be 500, 600, 800 yards away. So, I mean, it's a long ways. And it's trotting across this cornfield, and you can see the guy had a block out, and you can literally see it stop, throw its nose up, and turn and come trotting in because that was a familiar
Wow.
smell. It smelled it all summer. That's what they'd been using, on that property. And like for me, we have this farm here, we've got about 600 acres. Well, my neighbor has 1,000. He doesn't hunt at all. Super good guy. I don't get to hunt his place, and that's fine. But don't get me wrong, I put our BB square out by the fence and I'll put a camera on it. And then once it's gone, I'll pull that card, look at it. Well, guess what? I go back over there and then I'll pull that feed maybe 100 yards off the fence, pour out another pile, put a camera on it. And I literally can pull deer from his property onto ours and kind of move them to a feed site that I already have established and start getting pictures of them. And it'll be deer I've never seen on camera before.
Yeah, those are some great points. Kind of seems like they definitely play a role in attracting deer, bringing them in. So I assume that's a good case study for the long range attractant. Also bringing them in closer for a shot, like you're talking about. But do you use them for any other like particular purpose, or those your main strategy whenever you're putting out an attractant?
That goes back to what are you trying to do? At the end of the day, what are you trying to do? You trying to kill a deer? You're trying to grow a deer? All of the stands that I hunt, I pretty much know which direction the winds are coming out of. Now, I don't ever really hunt overfeed though. I mean, I've got several. I mean, we've got a couple of gravity feeders that I try to run. I mean, the stuff's expensive. I've worked for the company and I can't afford to feed it year round.
Yeah.
But that feeder's usually is usually run and it might go dry here and there. And then I might take, like we have some smaller bags, like some 6 pound bags. And depending on what the wind is and what the situation is, I'll go pour a smaller bag on the ground, even though I may have a gravity feeder, in the area. And the deer are used to it, but they won't be used to me pouring out like during bow season, for instance. That's something I highly utilize, especially on some of the little food plots that I do here and there. I will take and, pretty much pour some out on my 20 yard pin and my 30 yard pin,
Yeah, just sweeten
because
up your
that's
honey
where I.
hole a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, we do something real similar up at my place. We'll have big food plots and they're set up, big 200, 250 yard plots where you're set up to rifle hunt them. But then there's usually one corner where we got to hang on for bow season, and we'll take that corner. And when we're planting, we'll dose it with a little something special that'll be doing good in early season. So you got this big food plot, you can't make a 200 yard bow shot, but eventually them deer are gonna check out whatever's in that back corner you're sitting in.
Yeah, we do the same thing.
That's the same here. It's pretty much exactly what we do, except for me, I've got it set up one spot for the kids and kind of one spot for me. And then there's a few places, that the kids won't go with me that I'll just try to bow hunt or muzzleloader hunt out of,
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. Check out a few of this week's great sponsors.
NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I use NCX. NCX helps over 20,000 American landowners like you understand and maximize the value of every acre. Find new revenue streams for your land with programs like timber, carbon, wildlife habitat, solar energy, and more. Get started with a free account at ncx.com and discover the true value of your land.
Texas Hunter. Texas Hunter Products is celebrating 70 years of engineering the highest quality outdoor products in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality, dependability, and durability. Their premium standards have earned the trust of generations of anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts across the country. Texas Hunter directional fish feeders feature patented technology and are among the highest rated in the industry. With multiple capacities available and deployment options for shorelines or docks, Texas Hunter has the fish feeder for any lake or pond. You can trust that Texas Hunter products will meet your needs for generations to come. Learn more at texashunter.com.
First South Farm Credit. What does a farm mean to you? Maybe it's just a piece of land where you can go relax or enjoy the outdoors. Whatever the farm means to you, First South Farm Credit can help you finance or refinance that perfect piece of land. As a successful financial cooperative, First South shares its profits with its borrowers in the form of a patronage refund, which lowers your cost of borrowing. To find out how First South can help you, visit their website at firstsouthland.com or call them at 800-955-1722. They are an equal housing lender.
I see a lot of times you see people, I think, look at attractants as kind of a silver bullet, you know, like they think of it as a shortcut. But I know, you know, people use it that way, baiting, you know, they just think, oh, I'll throw out some corn or I'll throw out an attractant and I can just hunt. And talking with you, you seem like you've definitely grown well beyond that point. I think Butch has too. I'd like to think I have. But I guess, what do you see as the most common mistakes? Like, people buy a bag of attractant or they buy a block and they put it out. And I know there's a lot of people you see, they're unhappy with it. They say, oh, I put it out, no deer came to it. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's like, well, did you put it out in an area where there's deer? Like, did you leave it out long enough that they could find it? Where do you think most people go wrong just putting a tractant out in the woods?
They don't know what they're buying.
Really?
I mean, yeah, when you think about deer tractants, you think, oh, it's all the same stuff in a bag, but I don't really need to pay attention. You just open it up and go pour it out. Every year, we will get at least one phone call. Every year. I've been here 10 years. Sometimes we get more, but every year we get at least one phone call of some disappointed customer about why, wanting to know why it didn't grow. And I have to tell him, well, sir, it's because it's
not supposed to grow.
It's a supplemental feed, so you don't plant it. They just come by and eat it. And then usually they're like, oh, I mean, most times they just hang up. And sometimes I like to humor them a little bit and ask them if they had any rain or anything on it. But no,
did you water?
I mean, yeah. But I know every year, man, we do. We'll get a phone call about why did it not grow? I'm sorry, it wasn't supposed to. But let's take like Khmer deer, for instance. Probably one of the number one selling deer attractant of all time. How long had that? That's been around since I was a kid.
Yep, long time.
Or deer cane or whatever, you know. When do you think the number one, the top months that stuff sells? When do you think it is? When is it sitting on the shelf at, you know, at your bow shops, your gun shops, your box stores? When do you think the number one selling time frame is for that?
I can actually give a pretty good answer to that because I used to work big box retail in the outdoor industry, and we would start stocking it in July, and we'd sell through a bunch of it kind of September, October down here right around our opener, and then we sold everything that we had Black Friday, and by after that, there was nothing on the shelves. Like, there'd be four bags of something that had been tore and taped back together. Was my personal experience down here. I'm sure some of that's regional.
But like for that product, for instance, it's a sodium-based product. It's considered to be more of a, it's supposed to be more of a mineral, we'll call it a mineral type product. So it should have been out in, you know, May, June, July. Yeah,
early summer.
But yeah, the retailers said it, you know, not a whole lot of people care about minerals in the spring. Your average hunter does not, but it sits on the shelf during November during that prime gun season time frame. Everybody just runs in there and grabs a jug and goes pours out, and then they wonder why it doesn't work, because it's the wrong time frame. It's the wrong time period for it. Deer are not too crazy about, you know, sodium. They're more worried about that in the hot summer and the spring. And so what happens is it doesn't work. They're mad, and then come about turkey season or somewhere after, or maybe July, they're wandering through the woods and there's a big hole there, and they're like, man, I wonder what happened here. Oh, yeah, wait a minute. I poured out some of that Khmer deer or whatever, you know. Yeah. That's probably like for us, you know, we try to label very clearly on our products what it is and what the usage is for. And, you know, the back tells you how to use it. And we ask our retailers, do not set our minerals in the fall, because we don't want our customer to have a bad experience with our products, because they're not going to work. Sure. Most of them are, I mean, our mineral block is more, it's a, you know, a sodium based kind of block. Our head rush is heavy in sodium and stuff. Now, we do have one mineral legit. It's less sodium, more flavor. Now it's a really, really good mineral, but even most of your mineral products, you know, they get to be labeled like, you know, a mineral, but there's not really any minerals in that jug of liquid or that bag of salt. It may have a claim on there that there's some, but there's not much. But so truly, the only mineral that deer is going to get is whatever's in your soil. So you better hope you have a rich, you know, a rich soil.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's some great points there as far as you got to know what you're putting out, when you're putting out, and make sure that it matches up with whatever's going on in that deer's life right now. Like you're talking about the minerals in early summer, late spring, that's what they need right at that time. So like, what specifically would you want in your supplemental deer attractants during the fall?
Well, like for me, like I use our BB Square a lot. The deer really, really love the smell. And we do a bone collector blend too. It works just as good too. It has a really strong, good smell to it. But for me, so like if you take our BB Square product, it is basically formulated as a complete ration of feed for deer at the end of the day. It's high in protein, has a lot of energy. It's probably the highest on the market as far as the TDN goes, which is the total digestible nutrition. And I think it tops out at like 92%. So what you're getting then is there's a lot more goodness going into that deer and it's crapping out a lot less. You know, for me in the winter during season, especially like if you look at rut, man, when that deer's all run down, you don't want just a salt, a sugar, you know what I mean, on the ground. Because the deer are different from us, man. They if they're eating something good, something healthy, something nutritional. That rejuvenates their body, so to say, especially when it's really, really run down. They know the difference. They can feel the difference in their body pretty much. So I know if I'm giving them something good, I'm going to have that's going to kind of be the hot spot on the farm, right? You look at most guys are just putting out corn. Yeah, deer love corn, but at the end of the day, there's no nutritional value really in that corn. There's, you know, some fats and stuff gives them some energy, but at the end of the day, it's not ideal,
Candy.
I guess you could say. Yeah, right. So, and even like around here, you know, I do have some other neighbors that hunt and stuff, and they always talk about the tons and tons of corn they put out. And I'm like, man, that's great because I already know I can pull your deer. You know, we get a lot of the same pictures and we joke back and forth and stuff. But come hunting season, man, I'll have a lot of the deer because even the does, you know, you think about a hard winter and there's not as much natural forage and stuff for the deer. They need something that's good for them at the end of the day. So, I mean, for me, a lot of times I'll use BB Square just because of the nutritional side of it. And it has that aroma that the deer really love.
You would use that one in the fall and kind of going into the winter, and then later in the winter into the rut, you'd use the same one.
Yeah. I mean, we do like we have BB Square and then we do it in apple. The deer really like the apple. But for me, like our bone collector blend that we do and the BB Square are the two that works best on our farm. And we do some liquids too. It's weird. I got a buddy that lives about 3 miles down this county road from me. And like we do a BB squared liquid. And the deer on his place absolutely love it. And for whatever reason, I can pour it out here on this farm. The deer will turn their nose up and walk by it. That's another thing is you do kind of have to look at your products and kind of figure out, you know, what works best for you as well at the end of the day.
It's weird that you talk about that. I've noticed that even with just natural food sources, like there's some properties where if you get a hot, what's the name? I think they call it a swamp chestnut oak is the proper name. We call them cow acorns down here is what I've always heard people tell them. But you get these big white oak acorns out in the river bottom swamp, and you can go on one piece of property, and if you find one of those, it's money. But then I got a track around the corner from my house, and I can take you to a dozen big trees that make big acorns, and they rot on the ground. Like the deer tracks all along the edge of the riverbank, and then every one of those acorns will rot on the ground. And if they don't rot, you'll see next year in the spring, you'll see saplings coming up by the thousands. They'll all just sprout. Nothing eats them.
Yeah, every piece of property is a little different.
Definitely. Do you have any tips? I want to dig deeper down this rabbit hole a little bit, but when you're looking at a piece of property and you're thinking about where you want to put an attractant out, do you focus on, like, do you put your attractants near other food sources, like your food plot? Do you put them where they're convenient to hunt? Do you put them close to bedding? Do you put them in like travel corridors where you know that deer will find them? How do you look at a piece of property and decide where you're going to put one out?
Close to water,
Usually,
maybe.
no. Usually for me, it's travel because I'm trying to get that deer to stop so I can shoot it.
Yeah, that makes
I like
sense.
it. I like it.
a lot of times, you know, even on our small food plots here, I've got a good idea of where all the deer have been traveling, you know, and where the bedding is. So it usually just depends on where I'm hanging that stand because I know there's going to be deer come other directions, you know, other than where I'm sitting and where I think they're you know, most of the travel's coming from. So I'm still putting out our small bags in that food plot at the same time, you know, I usually am sitting there where I can see, you know, the travel areas and stuff like that as well, but I'll put some out there too, because I'm trying to get them to stop.
I think we alluded to it a little bit as far as the heat goes. You're going to want to, put out some minerals in the early summer, kind of going into the hottest part of the summer to supplement. They need that sodium and stuff that time of year. But does anything else affect it? Does terrain affect it? What about deer density? Does any of that affect the way that you use it or how you use it or the quantity that you use these attractants in?
Yeah, if you look at like our attractants, as far as like I keep going back to BB squared and our cube, our block, it's because of, like I said, it has a high TDN and stuff. It actually, a deer can't eat a lot of it. It's actually very filling. But what you'll figure out is, man, all of a sudden you're feeding, when you were just feeding five, you're feeding 20 or something, or 15, you're feeding more deer. So I find myself actually using, I'll be using more of it, but yet I'm still feeding more deer on our property. And then looking at, if you think about summertime, I'll put out more during the summer, especially, man, when it's dry. You think about all the nutrients those deer are, they're getting from the browse and stuff. And, you look across that, like our hay field, for instance, certain times of year, I keep referencing it because I think we'll just fill up with deer. But man, when it's dry, well, the nutrients in those leaves and stuff are drying up too. So I'm trying to put more out for the deer as well. And then, I'm supplement feeding as well, as far as, minerals and stuff.
Here's the $1 million question for you. So my experience, at least here in Alabama, and I've had this conversation with friends all the way up the Tennessee River Valley, folks in the Black Belt. Like, this has been my experience: public land, private land, high pressure, low pressure. I can think of one place off the top of my head where this isn't true, but most properties, if you put out an attractant and you put a camera on it, you'll get lucky on low pressure areas and you'll get some daytime deer traffic. But far and away, and it can be worse on other properties like my lease up in Evergreen, we don't hunt it a lot. There's not a lot of hunter pressure on it, but the deer up there, you'll get 500 nocturnal pictures for every one picture in daylight. Is there any way that you can put your block in a place where deer will come to it in daytime? What's your best tips for getting them to come out during legal shooting light?
You shut your feeder down at night. No,
Yeah,
because that's,
good point. Yeah.
man, I, you know, earlier I said, we've got a lot of gravity feeders, then I have some spin cast feeders as well. And I just make sure they're shut down at night, but they'll only feed during the daytime for the, for the most part. But as far as blocks go, no, you can't really control it. But man, with our block, it does seem like, I've talked about the nutritional aspect of it. They will come back to it way more than they will other blocks, because they're coming back for something good. So other than, shutting down a feeder, truly a TF would be shutting down at night. But man, I see a lot of deer on our products during the day. And at one time, we that was part of one of our testimonials, was we did a testimonial campaign. It was like, talking about bringing your bucks out in the daylight, because people do, that's one of the things we'll see in customer service all the time, is, man, I get a lot more daytime pictures over your products. And the only thing we can really attribute that to is the nutritional aspect. That's, that what we put into the bag. And I guess here's something I should have started off talking about from the get-go, is we actually have six or seven PhD nutritionists on staff. We actually have a big cattle company in the background of what we do. And these nutritionists, their job, it's feedlot nutrition, not your mom and pop, cattle operations and stuff like that. But, and they're, it's one of the biggest ones across the Midwest. And those guys, their job is to, and they call them a prescription, basically. They write a script, and their job is to make that cow get up and get on his feet and go to that bunk and consume as much feed as it can in a short amount of period of time, to put weight on to go to sale. And they take the same, I'm gonna call it, technologies that they implement in the cattle side. And we use the same thing on the deer side. And to the best of my knowledge, nobody else really, we have a few key ingredients in there. It's funny, you can actually hide a lot of things in a feed label that people don't know about, and just, we don't really talk about it. But at the end of the day, I guess my biggest tip here, whether it's our products or somebody else's, I guess, would be, whenever you do buy a bag, make sure it's something that is somewhat nutritional for that deer, because, man, they know the difference if they're showing up to eat a Hostess Ding Dong or a Little Debbie something, and versus eating a rib eye and a salad. That was kind of a poor analogy, but
No, I get it.
at the end of the day, they don't eat like you and I, man. We could sit down and eat two boxes of brownies and gorge ourselves on this and that, and just, deer are different. Animals are different. They're ruminant. It's just different in how they eat and stuff. So,
Yep, browsers.
No, I was going to think, I think maybe just since they got a shorter lifespan, maybe they got to grow up a little bit faster. Because I know eating ding dongs and little Debbies, like you described me when I was in college, I could have dinner be a six pack of Miller Lite and a family sized bag of Pizza Bites, and I didn't think anything of it. And you get a little older,
Changes.
you learn real quick. You can't do that. You need to eat
Yep.
some lean meat and a salad to
Yep.
keep you in tip top shape. You'll feel it.
No
So.
doubt about that.
And truly, I would think just in general, that's like our product line. We take a nutritional, we're nutrition first in everything we do, pretty much. That's, I mean, I think that's why we've had such a successful career at Big and J. We've kind of been the truly the attractant leader for several years now. And it goes back to the nutrition that's in the product and the fact that our customers have success over our products. You know, if you look at it, sorry, this is not really the topic, but if you look at our product line, we are usually a couple of bucks higher than our competitors, but still yet day in and day out, we outsell them. That's because customers have a great experience with our products, which goes back to, at the end of the day, it's all about nutrition for us.
Yeah, it's definitely a testament if it works, if people keep buying it and keep using it.
Well, the funny thing is any, I mean, it goes back to the consumer. You know, most consumers who just focused on an attractant, you know, if you look at our packaging, the, you know, we talk more about attractant on our bag, and then in the corner of it's the nutritional aspect of what's in the bag. People don't really put a whole lot of focus on that anymore. As far as I'm going to say, your average deer hunter, right? There's always the exceptions out there that are the hardcore deer hunter, you know.
Yep, definitely sounds like people need to pay a little more attention to the nutritional value in these attractants.
Man, it goes a long ways. It'll make a difference because we don't. I'm in Arkansas. We don't kill huge deer, but every year we kill pretty good deer on the farm. And you know, everybody like, man, what's going on over there? And I was like, well, it's what we're putting out for them. It's how we, you know, that's how we work the property. We're just not going out the week before rifle season and putting out corn.
Right. Yeah, you're giving them what they need whenever they need it, and so they stick around.
Right.
Yeah.
Zach, I would say one of my biggest issues with baiting sites and, making some licks under bow stands and a little attractant sites, I call them, is it drives me nuts when I get 100 pictures of coyotes or excuse me, raccoons or hogs, eating my stack of delicious stuff that I have saved for my deer. Is there any way that you can combat that other than putting it in a cage that the deer can get in as well?
No, there's a little bit you can do for raccoons and stuff. Like we have a product called Cotton Crave. It's got cottonseed in it. Raccoons can't eat it. Well, let me rephrase that. They can eat it, but it actually hurts their stomach really bad. So they will not, they'll still, they're now like we have roasted soybean in ours and some corn. Now they'll still come and get some of that stuff out, but at least you still have the cottonseed, you know, and stuff like that the deer come by for. But other than like for hogs and stuff like that. No, our block, and the bad thing is, man, everything loves our block. You know, we've hunted some places in Texas before that we do a lot of work with, and you'll go down there and they'll actually have, you know, like the prickly pears or the cactus or whatever. You know, they'll have them zip tied to the feeders of the legs. You know, I've seen people put, you know, nail strips down them and everything, you know, just about everything else. I will actually try to do a little bit of coon hunting at night here and there during season around here just to try to, you know,
Thin them
get
out.
rid of them. But
Yeah.
yeah, because man, yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, we have a lot of coons as well. Just try and keep the traps out close to those sites, I guess.
Yeah, I bought man, what are those foothold traps?
There's a bunch of them. Dog proof.
Duke is a
Was that
big manufacturer. Yeah.
yeah, I bought a couple of those. I haven't had a chance to put out yet, but somebody told me to put some marshmallows in them, that they work great.
They work. Pop-Tarts. Chocolate Pop-Tarts. My raccoons like chocolate Pop-Tarts a lot.
You can. I knew a guy who used to swear up and down he would live trap raccoons, and he would make a bait, and it was cornbread, tuna, canned tuna, and then onions. And he swore you got to put the onions in there. And the only problem was he would mix that stuff up, and he'd break it out of his little Ziploc bag to bait his traps, and it'd make me hungry out in the middle of the woods. It was pretty good. I bet the raccoons
Man.
ate it. He said, raccoons love it. I said, man, I bet they do.
Bet they do. It's making me hungry.
That's funny because, man, we I've got a couple of live traps that we'll put out as well. And my son, he's my 8-year-old. He asked me the other day, we trapped some raccoons, and I've always referenced them as a live trap. And he's like, Dad, why do you call this a live trap if all we do is when we catch one, we go shoot it and dump it out somewhere. I was like, well, we'll explain that later.
That's right.
Zach, do you ever have the opposite problem? Because I know I've definitely had the problem that Butch talks about where you put it out and it gets eaten up too quick and it gets eaten by non-target species. But I've also had a couple times where I put a block out and they just never got touched. Like, has that ever been something you've run into? Do you ever start an attractant site and then just decide it's time to move on to a different location? Or how do you know if you've chosen a bad spot? How long do you give it before you reset?
Man, usually if it's a new area, I wouldn't put out a block because for me, a block is kind of like if I was to come to your house, I walk in your living room and I put a box down in there and leave. You know, next thing you come in, you come home, come to the door, you know, somebody's been there, there's something different, there's a huge box right there, and you're kind of freaked out about it. And I go back to like our 6 pound bags, I think, are a prime example of VB Square. I mean, we do Cotton Crepe and we do that Bone Collector blend. But like for me, if it's going to be a new area, I would just go in with a small bag and don't just pile it up. Man, spread it out a little bit because I mean they're naturally browsing around anyway and they find it. But if you go in there into their house and you dump a big old pile of something right there, they know something's up right off the bat. Man, you aren't stupid. So first of all, I wouldn't use the block at all. I would go with like a granular product, one of our granular products, something like that first. And I wouldn't even put it in a pile. I would try to spread it, you know, just kind of spread it out with your hand there. Let them get used to that new smell in the area and let them just kind of naturally find it. And then you go back in there the next time. Hey, you can just kind of pour a little line out or something. It's a familiar aroma in the area at that point. And then also, I didn't think about this earlier. I'm sorry. A lot of times, man, I'll actually cut our stuff with corn. It's a cheap filler. If I find that, man, I'm running through this stuff too quick. So at least if you cut it with corn, you are slowing down your consumption rate and you're still giving them a little bit of something good.
Yeah, that makes sense. How do you mix that? You just mix it in like a 5 gallon bucket, put some corn, and then put some the powder in there?
Just depends. Like on some of our gravity feeders, a lot of times I'll pour one of our products in first, you know, like a 20 pound bag. I might pour 10 pounds in, and I'll take like a 50 pound sack of corn, and then I'll pour the rest of that 20 pound bag in. Or a lot of times I'll use one of our 40 pound bags, to be honest, because it gives me way more in there. And it's a finer product, so it kind of sifts and finds its way to the bottom and spreads. I had a guy actually call the other day, and he was telling me that he's got some of those big, like they're on time gravity feeders. But anyway, he puts a big PVC pipe in there. And he'll actually pour the corn in, and then he pours our VB Square in that PVC pipe, and then pulls the pipe out. So to him, it's kind of evenly mixed in the center. I was like, man, that's kind of a neat idea.
Yeah,
But yeah, I just kind of I'll layer it in there or something like that.
I had never thought about putting it in a feeder with to supplement the corn. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Zach, I think you've done a great job of kind of walking us through you guys' product lineup and when to use what and where to use it to be maximum effectiveness. Do you think there's any myths or misconceptions about deer attractants that you'd like to clear up?
I don't know. I think a lot of people think it's magic. You know, you should just walk right out there and pour it out, and then they should show up tomorrow. There's just a lot more that goes into it. You know, attractants get blamed a lot for spreading diseases and stuff like that. You know, CWD and I mean that's a whole. I mean that's like 10 more podcasts right there.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't necessarily feel the same because I don't know that you're conjugating that much deer, but you know, I think it's also kind of funny that a lot of times using attractants is somewhat frowned upon. Oh, you shot that deer over a pile of corn, you know. It just kind of, man, at the end of the day, I think when it comes to stuff like, you know, people frowning upon it or something, it's more like, man, if you're out having a good time, if you like the deer that you're going to shoot or your kids, to me, it's just more about whatever it takes to get you outdoors, you know. And as hunters, we should just kind of band together and not frown on your tactics of how you've taken that deer, harvested that deer, however you want to say it, you know. You know, I've got some buddies that bow hunt, and I've got a buddy that shoots crossbow. Heck, man, if I'm pressed for time, I'll go shoot my crossbow all day long. But you know, they want to crack jokes on the guy over here shooting the crossbow. You know, you got to be a traditionalist and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, why don't you go get you a recurve then, if you're going to be that way about it, or a slingshot.
Right.
I like to hear that because we can't see because this is a podcast and not video, but Butch is over here laughing because they give me a really hard time because I hunt with a crossbow.
We do,
So.
but to be clear, it's all in good fun. I think as long as you're in the outdoors and you're doing something legal, I don't care what you do, as long as it gets you in the woods, truly, I feel that way.
That's funny. There's actually a deer running across the hill right now. I can't tell what it is.
You run into that block.
But yeah, it just seems like, attracted sometimes just kind of get blamed for things, whether it's the spread of diseases or, oh man, that's not ethical or whatever. So I've asked a guy before, how is, he was like, I'm not hunting over bait and this and that. And I was like, well, you want to tell me how that food plot you put right there in the middle of that growed up patch of trees, how's that not baiting or, you know what I'm saying? Because that's not natural. You just put a
Right.
food
Yeah.
plot there. You just conjugated, a food source and blah, blah, blah. That's, how's that no different than me going and buying a bag of feed and pouring it out? Oh, that's not the same. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Situations like that, you got to remind people, well, like, hey, look, if you went out there and you planted that food plot with your tractor, like, really, the traditional way to do it would have been a hoe or a mule and a,
Yep.
you know,
Yeah. Yeah.
everybody cheats a little bit. You know, you get there. Get to your tree stand and you rode there in your big F-250 with your Bluetooth and your GPS and
Right.
your central air, and you sat out there in your PrimaLoft jacket,
With your
a
ozone
fiber.
generator.
That's it. Yeah, you got a jacket with fibers that took NASA and the U.S. military industrial complex 40 years to invent and $7 billion. Like, come on now.
Yeah.
Yep,
That's
we're
like
all on the same team.
those turnips just didn't pop up on their own over there. So,
That's right. Well, Zach, we really enjoyed this conversation today. We appreciate you being on Hunting Land, man. If people want to follow along with Big and J or learn more about your products, where would you push them to?
man, if you're on social media outside platforms, as far as Facebook and Instagram, and heck, man, we even have a TikTok account now.
All right.
But even going to our website, and the funny thing is, if you do have any questions, do send an email into the info box, because there's a really good chance also it's going to be me that answers it. So yeah, just go to the website, and if you have any questions, shoot it over to customer service. I'll be more than happy to have a conversation with you.
Awesome, man. Definitely appreciate you being on today. You guys go check out BigAndJ, all spelled out, .com, man. We appreciate you being on today, Zach. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Hey man, I did too. I hope we get to do it again.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Talk
Good
soon.
luck out there too. Good luck
That's
this
right.
season.
Have a good
Hey,
season.
y'all too. Thank y'all.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. Check out a few of this week's great sponsors.
Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you.
That was a cool podcast, man. You could tell Zach, uses the product and is familiar with it. I picked up a lot of tidbits of wisdom from him. What'd you pick up?
I think what I like the most about what he was saying is he started out right out the gate, even though, he does work for Big and J. He was honest, like, man, like you can't outcompete natural food, really. If the acorns are hot and the persimmons are falling, like they'll walk past everything to go eat hot acorns. And I think I like that little bit of honesty, not trying to sling snake oil to you. I like that. And then
Well, what are you going to do whenever there's no acorns? Like last year, we had
that, yeah.
zero. We had zero. And then this year, it's looking the same way, unfortunately.
We had a drought last year and had a drought this year, and I keep waiting for them to drop, and they're not dropping. They never dropped. And then down here, this too, but by December, they're kind of petering out, you know. And if you got a drought, the food plots aren't doing good, so you got to do something. And I like what he was saying is, you know, you can try to bait them with candy, or you can give them a solid square meal, and they got the sense to go after a square meal. And sounds like they put some work into making sure that they're not just selling you candy in a bag with a catchy name. So,
Yeah, what, 6 or 7 PhDs on staff, nutritionalists, and all kind of stuff.
yeah, that's a rabbit hole now that I'm thinking about just as a writer. Like that'd be a good piece right there to talk with some of them guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And Zach did a good job of, you know, kind of giving us a roundabout idea of what the deer needed at what times. And it's not a silver bullet, like you're saying. It's not a smoking gun. You know, you still got to check your wind. You still got to hunt properly. You still got to put them where the deer want to be or where they're going. Definitely some good tips in there.
Yeah, I got a really good chuckle when he was talking about the time frame that people would put out salt licks, because he's right, you know. Like we would get them in July, and people would be putting them out early bow season. And what he said's true, you know. Like they were eating all that stuff in spring, summer when it was hot, and they needed minerals for antlers or for fawn development. Like they're not going to eat that again till turkey season. So.
Right. Yeah, you got to know what your deer want and what they need, and give it to them whenever they need it. That's what it's designed for. Cool podcast, man. Thanks for joining me today. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Had a blast.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list, and wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.